And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's a little, perhaps a labored comparison, but yeah, it's the most popular movie of all time. So stick with me, Andy. Avengers, Endgame, Doctor Strange, you know, calculates, what was it, 1 in 14 million chance that they'd win. I don't know that a midfield of Jake Arndt, Riley Collier-Dawkins and Liam Baker bringing us back from a 5-goal deficit against a top 8 contender is quite those odds, but even for those of us who've been watching every week, that was a pretty unlikely outcome.
There was actually a moment, I was going to bring it up later, but in a moment in the third quarter when obviously the game was crucial in the balance as it was all game, we had Marlon Pickett, Arts, Graham and RCD in the center as our center square combination, and we won the clearance.
An assorted mix of top 10 draft picks for the Giants.
Yeah, like, you know, you can always get one random clearance that goes your way, but to only mildly lose the clearances and the center square clearances with all our first choice people out was quite extraordinary. It was also interesting, and I credit SJ Ross for making this observation, is even though we were actually technically favourites, it did feel so much before the game we were underdogs.
I'm always a mess before the game, and I actually changed my tip to us just before the game because I thought, we've got a lot out, but I just feel like we've got too much quality at either end. And it didn't really work out that way, but work out it did.
So one thing in hindsight, they did have 12 players under 50 games.
They did, but... Now,
And as you point out, it's a very high quality 12 players.
Indeed. Yeah, the guys like Lockie Ash, or Lockie Ash, as Eddie seemed to have a senior citizen moment halfway through, confusing Patrick Nash. Tom Green looked really good.
It was amazing that Eddie managed to drop the N off Nash, considering his dad was quite a good league footballer as well when Eddie was a young reporter then. So yes, it's not like it's a name that's never been unknown to football before. But yeah, it was. I must admit, beforehand, Nick, I was it was a real struggle to motivate myself to the game. Like, fortunately, I'd agreed to go with someone else. I was sort of obligated, but I left it to the last moment, walked in a moment before Bounce Town, you know, sort of once you're there, you're into it, but, you know, complaining about Docklands, which, you know, in fairness, and we'll talk about this issue, it took me 2 minutes to get into the ground. The public transport worked really well. The seats, I only paid $10 above the basic, like the free seat, once the very helpful people at Richmond sorted it out. It actually wasn't a terrible fan experience. You know, I was down just around the corner from the cheer squad. I was amongst the Tiger faithful. We're underneath on the bottom deck underneath the concrete concourse. So when it got loud, it got really loud. Like, you know what, Nick? It felt a bit... Do you remember when we were kids and we were going... Well, in our teens and we were going to games and... You're sort of the... I know it's ridiculous, it's a complete conceit considering we've won three of the last four, but it felt like the old days when it was just this sort of...
scrappy mid-table clash.
Yes, and where this not very good team and it's just the hardcore and the faithful and the people who've got nothing else to do. It was a small crowd, but, you know, like... When you're in a small crowd and once the game gets close, it doesn't feel like a small crowd anymore. Do you know what I mean? When Rioli kicked the winning goal, because there was no one sitting in my row, I actually ran 10 meters down the row with my fists in the air cheering and then ran back to hug a Tiger fan. It was Yeah, it was like that sort of feel that you it's sort of this random Saturday where it means a lot to you, but it's not like it felt off Broadway, but it still felt really special. Like it was a very fun game.
Oh, look, I was going to say that I'm enjoying this late stage cranky speaking his mind dimmer, I must say, like, because I'm very firmly anti Docklands, although, you know, it did look like fun when we won. If we hadn't won, sort of take it all back, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that like, I mean, we're down by 3 goals with 8 minutes to play. Like, you say, there are a lot of universes where that game's not won. And we'll come back to this point. But since you brought up the Dimmer commentary, obviously I've taken, and it's interesting, you know, like, so we've won our last two. It's been two of our best wins of the year at Docklands. Like, from a pure football perspective, the coaches seem to have worked out Docklands. Like, they don't have a problem coaching.
Our records, if you take out the Western Bulldogs, our record there has actually got quite good. Now, that might be because we have to play North Melbourne there, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting, but I almost think that, like, and because in the prelude to that, those comments Dimmer made about hating Docklands, which now got so much press, he talked a lot about the fans, and it's almost like he sort of late stage Dimmer has taken on this fan advocate role. Like, he didn't need to make those, you know, we'd won the game, he didn't need to distract from anything. It's almost like he feels the Tiger Army. Do you know what, like, he feels his responsibility to talk up for the Tiger Army. And like, I think, like, the comments were strong, and if you watch the press conference, I encourage people to do so. After Dimmer drops that truth bomb about Docklands, there's this really awkward silence in the press conference. Now, that might be just because everyone was furiously writing it down because they knew they got the story for tomorrow. But there was also a bit of, like, silence in the crowd.
I wonder if it's because after everything Dimmer's been through, he's come out the other side, he's with a contract extension, position seeming more unassailable than ever. I think the handbrake's off. He's saying what he likes.
Yeah, like, there's an us against the world, like, but, you know, people have said this is even more of the us against the world stuff, but the us against the world stuff is, like, he does that with his players, but you don't have to do that against a stadium. But, like, he's just, like, he's, as wrestling fans, we would say, he's fully leaning into the heel manager role. He spoke for a lot of us when he said that. But, yeah, it actually turned out to be a really happy memory. You know, I think it's easy to be hyperbolic about how big a victory that is in the history of the recent kick, history.
A kick goes the other side of the post, and we're probably talking about it quite differently. How worried were you in the first quarter when our midfielders were bouncing off their midfielders when they tried to tackle them?
And they got a lot of inside. It felt like they were the total inside 50 count for the first quarter was 11 all, but it did feel like they had us. Like, it felt like they were getting good shots at goal. And in the second, obviously, they got the big lead out, and Hogan was dominating. So yeah, it did very much. I was genuinely concerned. But there was, Nick, this is so superficial, I wish I put it on Twitter. And this is like, it's you can dismiss this for being complete bullcrap, but I did say it to the person next to me, when Dusty kicked a goal in the second, he jumper tapped.
Which he doesn't do.
Exactly. It was a rare
home and away game.
Yeah. Rare non-finals jumper tap. And a little part of me thought, is he just not going to let us lose? I mean, he wasn't, depending on which metric you used, he might not have been best on ground, but he was close to.
AFL player ratings had him best on ground by some margin.
Yes, they did. The other measure had Baker best on ground. But yeah, there was just a little bit of, like, and as they walked off the ground, it wasn't, the TV cameras didn't catch it, but Dimmel was very emotional going down the race. And he really gave a hard fist pump to the team as he walked down the race. And then seeing Dusty give the big double fist pump to the crowd, he was actually looking in my direction when he did. I'm not saying he did it to me personally. He might have been doing, you know, thanks for all the podcasting work, Andy. Keep up the good work, Nick and Andy.
Yeah. You guys are the real MVPs.
Yes. Your constant complaining about my lack of pressure acts in 2017 and 18 really motivated me to clean up my defensive side of the game. It's totally what he was thinking. But there was definitely a line in the sand, sort of special win feel to it. And yeah, look, by most of the metrics, it was a pretty 50-50 game. The expected shots at the margin was 1 point. They had more marks inside 50. The inside 50s were very even. We lost a lot of the key metrics, but you know, we regularly lose, you know, we obviously lost disposal on those things, but, you know, we normally lose them. We didn't lose them by a lot. So, yeah, I think in all fairness, it was a 50-50 game. But, Nick, I will say one or two things about that. We're sort of tangenting off the tangent here. Like, Dusty also had another ceiling shot, which he could have won. They gave Dusty multiple good shots in the last quarter, which could have cost them, which probably should have cost them one or two more goals, considering it's Dusty.
My kids think it's impossible. Like, they came in when Naish passed it to Dusty in the pocket, and they just assumed he was going to kick the goal.
I was standing behind that kick, the line of that kick, and like we all thought he was going to kick that goal, right? Mm. And what a beautiful kick by Naish! But we'll talk about Naish in a second. But yeah, it was just. There was sort of imaginative. Oh, that's right. The other thing I was going to mention about Lee and Cameron's coaching. Like, as you saw in the replay.
Long may it rain.
Oh, lifetime contract for Leon Cameron. Like, no man is better at driving a Ferrari into a ditch than Leon Cameron. Last quarter, you're up by quite a few goals. You're a team that thrives on contested ball and clearances. So what do? They set up with two behind the ball so that they can get plenty of cheap backline possession, but they're outnumbered in the midfield and they're panicking because they can't find any free person because we've got our defense going. So it becomes a total Richmond game where we're just pumping the ball inside 50 over and over again. The last quarter we had 17 to 10 inside 50s. So they couldn't have defended a lead worse against us.
No.
They went into their shell.
The dam was going to break.
Yeah, anyway, magnificent coaching by Leon Cameron. They played into our hands, but what fun it was.
It was great. And look, I wonder if part of the reason Dimmer was so fired up is because he just has to coach. Like, when we have our settled 22, it's just not as much work, I think, as when he's scrambling to find solutions. You know, Bolter onto Hogan for the second half. Baker seemed to be in a variety of roles, like partly in the Lambert role, partly off half back, Arts into the middle. Like there was a lot of problem solving going on, and you know, by and large it worked.
Well, it worked because we won. Like something was obvious. We had Mansell and Naish at different times, particularly Mansell playing forward. Like something wasn't right then. And Dimmer talked about
well, because Arts was in the middle. They were short of pressure forward.
Yeah, but Dimmer talked about it afterwards that they were surprised by a couple of things that GWS did with the second ruck, and there was a lot of. I think that is the most creative game. Maybe I was there and I noticed it more. But that's the most, for the last 5 years, that's the most creative game. Well, sort of the old, if you call creativity like the old school shitty site way of just throwing the magnets everywhere, that's the most creative game I've seen us play. Because, you know, and not just because we had to play the midfield rotation, but as you say, that had flow-on effects on just players playing in really weird positions. So, fascinating game. And yeah, he did just enough to get us over the line. And completely agree with your core point. It was a coaching masterclass.
So I've literally got in my notes from about halfway through the second quarter, Riley Collier-Dawkins, no impact. And from that from that point on, look, in on AFL player ratings, he was in our top five players. But I thought, without blowing our own trumpet too much, that, you know, we talked about his potential, but what he needed to do, and we talked about, well, he doesn't win a lot of cheap football, and he didn't win a lot of cheap football in this game, but he won hard football. He took his chances. He was explosive when he needed to be. It was a triumph for the RCD truthers.
Yeah, I don't think, like, it was very much the best version of RCD that we've seen thus far, but it was still very much RCD. Like, he didn't get that much of the football. It is lovely. One of my thoughts after the game was, you might remember in preseason, I said, I hope we're not talking about those highlights he had in the VFL Grand Final 2 years ago at the end of this year. Well, we won't be anymore, because at the very least, you know, the RCD truth is, even if he doesn't play another good game, they'll have this game to say, well, if only it clicks, he's shown that he can do it at the top level. But there was sort of the yeoman's side to it, and so he still can't get the cheap ball, but his stat line wasn't that different to some of his VFL stat lines, and obviously at a higher level. I wonder, and we'll talk with this Nash as well, I wonder whether the quicker speed of the game suits him a little bit better.
I think he got, particularly after the goal, which was a very nice goal, like,
yep,
you know, the power to sidestep and snap on his left.
Second goal was a very lovely shot too.
The second goal from 48 metres that went into the third row, like, that is a power athlete with to have the strength to do that. But I think he just got more and more confident in his centre bounce work as well. And yeah, a lot of that was yeoman's work, you know, tapping it on, putting a body on. Like, he had more centre bounce contests than any other Richmond player. Like, it was. If he's gonna be that sort of a battering ram, there's a role for him in the team.
Yeah, he had, so to that point, you know, the highlights are self-explanatory, and that's why he had the high AFL rating. But he actually had, well, through his only third on our team, he had more pressure points, than any GWS player. So, you know, it shows he's getting around, and he had 400 metres gained as well.
Yeah, for an inside midfielder from 18 disposals, that's pretty good.
Yeah, like, it's definitely, you know, 18 disposals is too little for midfield, obviously, but there's a hell of a lot to like about that game. Yeah, so really impressive. But, Nick, I really think we've probably talked for long enough without mentioning Liam Baker, who had 22 disposals in the second half.
Yeah, he was just racking them up. You know, meters gained, contested ball, uncontested ball, inside 50s. Like, yeah, it was a really good game of football. I still think, Dusty best on ground for me. Just for, you know, he was the tip of the spear that got it done, but Baker was extremely good.
Yeah, and like a few points about that. And, you know, I don't think it's sustainable, him as a midfield, like as a true midfielder who plays in the centre square, because he's just so little. But
no, like, but what about the Kane Lambert role?
Yeah, well, I mean, just like, and you know, we've had this debate with some of our friends. Like, look, listen to his raw numbers, Nick. 16 contested possessions, 8 clearances, 75 pressure points, game leading. You know, any game that Jack Graham's playing in and you win the pressure points is, like, there's a lot there. And exactly, the Kane Lambert role, he may be able to do very well. I fundamentally believe we have to use him sparingly, and I'm not sure he's a true centre square player, but as a sort of, as you say, around the ground Kane Lambert time. I mean, he was just amazing. His second efforts, you know, people put different gifts up, but you can, so many key passages in the play involve a key Lambert moment. And he, I'm sure we've all watched the last 2 minutes a few times now. He almost won the game. If Jack Graham had just not put that hand pass behind him, he may well have kicked the winning goal as well. He's just incredibly brave. And God, we're just so lucky to have him as a rookie list player.
Yeah. Oh, just as a player, full stop. We talked about Naish before, but I thought this was his best game as well. Like, again, you know, he's not the biggest guy, and sometimes the tackles don't stick, but he is a very classy user of the football, and he covers a lot of ground. And when his intensity is dialed all the way up, that's a viable AFL footballer.
Yes, and you could see the again, I think there's a case that he might be better at, you know, perfect conditions, AFL speed. He may be a better player. I mean, his stat line was pure Paddy Naish, though. It was one contested ball, 14 uncontested. There were moments of, you pointed out already, he's kicked a dusty. There was at least, I've just forgotten it now, but there were at least one or two other goals that were set up by his good long kicking. I think he kicked it long to Bolter, who missed the shot. That was him. You can see at the AFL level, like, there's a real case. And as you say, if he can just be okay at the tackling and not get completely bossed at the contested ball, there's an AFL footballer there. Nick, since we're going through the sort of young players, what did you think of Hugo Rowsmith?
Oh, look, there is a kid born to run up and down the wing at the MCG. Look, we knew he's a very good athlete, but he just looked. You always wonder how good an athlete they look like next to other AFL footballers, and he still looked like a really nice run and gun athlete.
It's the hair too, but it's a bit of 80s to him, isn't there? Old school wingman. And it was funny, the commentators twice called him of how athletic he is. Now, he is athletic, but one wonders whether that hair makes him look a little even a bit faster than he actually is.
He tested really well.
I mean, yeah, I'm not saying he's a bad athlete, but it was just like, you pointed that out twice now, you know, like they don't normally, like, yeah, there are lots of fast guys playing AFL, but he needs to work it out in the AFL team and how we play him and a few others on the same team. But it was a very exciting debut, and I can see him being the type that if he sticks, that a lot of kids will have his number on his back on their back.
I was trying to explain to my wife why the private school mullet was a thing these days.
Yeah, well, he looks good in it.
Oh yeah, definitely. And really, I love the pre-game jumper presentations, and, you know, Butch Gale as a friend of the family. That was really nice.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously both people had very strong hair games, so, you know, there's some appropriateness there.
For a laboured transition, speaking of players who are fast, I thought, you know, almost like clockwork, we talked about how George Gostagna had been out of form, and he played a really good game, I thought.
Do you?
Yeah. His work rate, I thought, was key in the third quarter and other parts of the game. Like, he really, when we needed to turn the tide in midfield, I thought he was a key part of it. Like, 16 disposals, 8 marks, 4 tackles. Like, yeah, that's about double his averages for the past month. Like,
and imagine he didn't get a touch in the last quarter. So imagine if he'd kept it going. But since we're here, Nick, Jake Hartz.
Yeah,
he's become Mr. Miracle Goal.
and just solving problems. You know, need a small forward, he's there. Need a centre square midfielder, he's there. Yeah.
He was there. His contribution in the midfield was definitely round the ground. He looks very, very small in the centre square, but, you know, it was...
bigger than Baker.
True. But does he? Is he shorter than Banks? He looks shorter than Banks.
No, but he's 4 centimeters taller than Baker. Baker is really small.
Yeah, wow, interesting. Yeah, but like anytime we've got small forwards kicking, like he is just feeling it around goals at the moment.
Absolutely.
He's in rich, rich vein of form. Long may it last. And wasn't it good to have some of, like, they weren't perfect, but it was just great to see, like, Grimes and Vossi playing more like how we remember. And Broad too.
Yeah, I just thought, oh, that feeling of reassurance when having Grimes back in the team, like, yeah, it was really good.
So Nank got done in the taps, but he actually, aside from, you know, usual yeoman's work around the ground, and he murdered Lockie Whitfield in the last quarter, which was
deeply pleasurable.
Greatly, and Lockie Whitfield being Lockie Whitfield took a long time to get up. But he had 7 clearances personally and 50 pressure acts and 5 intercept marks, which is you know, team leading.
Very Nank.
Yeah, it's very, 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 very Nank, very, very tough game.
Yeah. And look, they're both big boys, the GWS rucks, and they've, you know, they've both been in the system 3 or 4 years. So, you know, clearly, like, Biggs looks like he's, you know, just been doing bicep curls for those 3 years. But yeah, so that they were very competitive in the taps. But yeah, Nank's reading of the play and his game sense and how to control passages of play, I thought was fantastic.
So Nick, you must have enjoyed, like, Jack again was fairly quiet during the game, played a decoy role, but so Jack, you know, he kicked the goal, set up the winner.
His knack for the moment. He did have a couple of speckies.
Yeah, he did. And
he did nothing easy, but yeah, he certainly had a few moments.
Yeah, and he dropped a few too. Like, it could have been, he could have had even more. So there's still something, and you know, in the very last seconds, it was the smartest punch to the boundary line that killed it.
Oh yeah, you know, definitely
killed the last few of the games. Now, Nick, there was one guy that really took me surprise. I haven't seen the coaches' votes, but you were telling me that Hooley got votes, and
no, Hooley didn't get votes.
Oh really? Okay, my apologies.
No, I didn't think he played particularly well.
Yeah, I'm worried. Like, you know, 21 stats, if you're it's playing Dream Team is fine. But, yeah, there were one or two things where he didn't read the contest properly and he pulled out or whatever, and I just thought there's a net.
I thought he looked physically a bit off.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. And that's often the thing what happens with older players is they lose confidence in their body, and so they lose confidence in those sort of key moments. So it might just be one bad game, but yeah, I was...
Fingers crossed. To finish off, look, the commentary wasn't very good all night, but...
Really, Nick, when I think it was Eddie called Jay short as broad, because, you know, they obviously are so physically similar.
Yeah, only half a foot difference. Rioli's goal, which was an extremely exciting moment, but to say that Dan Rioli's goals was one of his most important goals for someone who's kicked 14 goals in finals and grand finals, that felt like a bit much to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big moment. Like, I mean, we haven't won that many goals by one kick, but I didn't mind that high. I didn't mind that hyperbole in the moment. I hated that smart arsey crack about knockout blow.
Oh, that was twice to Saturdays
in a row. No, good. And the one thing was, as much as Eddie's counting down, the countdown clock was annoying. At least he did shut up for like the 5 seconds after the game and just let the 19,000 people roar like it was 60,000 at the G. So I did. That was if it was to find a positive, that was the moment they were quiet was definitely my highlight.
So, you know, you mentioned about the Giants had a lot of young players. You could certainly tell that by their VFL team. yeah, they were barely competitive all day in a 93-point loss. And so, look, honestly, sort of you wonder how much you can take out of the game. Like, Callum Coleman-Jones, you know, enormous game, you know, 19 disposals, 5 goals, 17 hitouts. But look, it looked like he was playing on a guy 10 to 15 centimetres shorter than him for large chunks of the time. So, yeah, there were some positives, but, yeah, the standard of opposition wasn't great.
Yeah, I thought, like, to me, we'll talk about CCJ in a second, but like the caddy 32 disposals, 2 goals, like, okay, you probably expect him to get that, but the eight tackles, like, it was a sign that, as much as you can tell from, you know, sort of these basic statistics, that he was, it's the kind of thing the coaches would want, and, you know, welcome back. And Will Martin, 32 touches as well and 7 tackles, like, they got to be happy with that. The guy to me who looked really above the level was Thompson Dow.
Yeah, look, and Xavier Clark singled him out, sort of saying that he'd lost 6 kilos from his appendicitis, and also that he didn't have that weight to lose. The thing from his junior highlights, and nobody's going to be the next Shane Edwards, but that moment of being able to sort of flash through a contest and create a clean bit of play where it was messy and in dispute, I saw some of that again, and that was very encouraging. And
yeah, and exactly what we need, right?
Yeah, and for a guy coming back from a serious injury, that was a really encouraging step, I thought.
Yeah, and look, Eggs looked like a world beater at that level. I actually credit, because, you know, we often question it. Some of Charles' contesting work was great. Like, his marking contesting work was very brave and really really hurt a GWS player at one stage, and himself hitting a pack hard, which set up a goal. I am amused that there's a Madonna who's playing quite well for us again. 27 touches.
Slightly different spelling, but yeah.
Yeah. Because it was Madonna Hugh, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But Garrett is the current one. Good for him. There was a Shipley as well, had a good game. So, good for them.
Oh, look, Ben Miller had a massive career high.
Oh, sorry,
Shipley's
one of these. My bad.
Yeah. Ben Miller had a massive career high in disposals for us with 19. Sydney Stack, just steady. And I don't think it's this week, but I think he's not too far away. And look, the only one I wanted, other player I wanted to mention, they had a bunch of debutants, most of whom were about 5'9", but they had a kid, Fraser Elliott, who is a 19-year-old inside midfielder from Oakley, who had 23 disposals with 5 kicks and 18 handballs. And he was a guy that was sort of on the fringes of the draft last year. So, but yeah, that's not a bad debut.
No, and like that's yeoman's work, right? Like,
that's yeoman's
into
work.
A team, there's quite a few AFL listed players, you know, first round draft picks, premiership players in the case of Caddy, and so yeah, you've got a previous spot on the team. Now, Nick, Coleman-Jones, interesting. Dimmer dedicated quite a while in his press conference to the answer. It was actually, I believe he was responding to Sarah Black's question about CCJ. He's sort of the current cause amongst the fans as the one everyone wants in, including Justin Charles, in inimitable style.
For whatever that's worth, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, in fairness, whatever you might think of Justin Charles' views about
everything,
the cryptocurrency, he was a ruck forward, so, you know, got to have some respect to that, and played more games in the AFL than we did. Zero. Where are you on the CCJ debate?
Look, I I would really like to see him in the team. Yeah, but I can also understand the logic of him not. When you look at the time on ground stats that the big guys are racking up, like they're hardly ever having any time off the ground. Like they're all the rotation minutes are going to the midfielders, and I just think, oh, you know, that having CCJ in would further compromise those midfield rotations. So I thought, you know, I can see why, but it would be fun to give him a game. I just
look, there's a couple. I do agree with your earlier point about his game. Like, as much as statistically impressive, you know,
he's been playing really well every week.
He has, but it's a bit hard to tell how that will translate. I'm not saying it won't translate. It's just it is hard because it's a different game for him. Because it's such a one-on-one matchup. Like, he's always, you know, got to beat out a guy to get the ball, but, you know, it's a lot easier when, because he's a grown-ass man these days. You know, I know it's controversial, but if we don't play him soon, we're going to lose him.
Definitely.
So
we may lose him anyway.
Yeah. I strongly support. And, you know, the bottom end of our rotations, weirdly, Bolter only got 64% game time last week. But, you know, we had Rouse Smith and Mansell in the 60s. When Cochin's not playing, you know, I just wonder, because we've got a lot of arm ballers who we're giving high game time to. I wonder whether we should show a bit more flexibility and give him a run to see what he's got. I'd like to. And also, Nick, just the sort of in the case for running, we're going to wear. Nank can't play 22 games like this. The man's a beast.
He played
85.
He's carrying 85 a big load. Yeah.
He's playing a huge role. He's probably the most physical ruckman in the AFL. Okay, that's probably complete bias on our behalf. But, you know, allow me this indulgence because he's ours. He played 85% game time. That's such a load for the ruckman.
Against two specialist rucks on the
Flynn, his primary opponent, had 72% game time. Like, there's got to be a case for take a punt to rest him. I'm not saying it's going to be this week, but, you know, maybe this is a good opportunity to transition to a Brisbane game we're probably quite both nervous about.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And we're
comfortable
underdogs, and deservedly so. They're playing at home. They've been really good at the Gabba. Look, their record has been a little soft. Like, they've you know, there's some pretty. They've only played three games against top eight teams. But yeah, they took care of business against Port Adelaide up there. Like, it was a bloodbath this week against the Suns, and it's a really well balanced team. Like, the Danaher was the perfect addition for a midfield for a forward line that didn't need him to be a savior. It just needed for him to be good, and he's been good.
Just basically anywhere, and not by. I have to say anywhere, but probably not Essendon was probably the right spot for him.
Well, but I think, you know, if he'd gone to a club like North, where he's having to carry the forward line, that wouldn't have suited him as well. But in a forward line with Cameron and Hipwood, McStay had four goals on the weekend. And he's backup. He's their backup ruckman as well, because they've got a number of other key forward, so he gets to run around the ground a bit. Yeah, I just think the current situation suits him, and yeah, they're a good team. I mean, we know that we played them three times in finals in the last 2 years. Lockie Neal's out, which is good because he always kills us. But
yeah, and having a great year,
but you know, Zorko's older than you think. He's 32, but you know, he's top 10 in the AFL in inside 50s, score involvements. Yep. McCluggage is a pretty Rolls-Royce midfielder. Lyons is good. Like, there's just
you know, Lyons 12th in the AFL right now in ratings?
Yeah. Yeah, for a guy who essentially delisted by the Suns. Like, incredible.
Delisted by the Suns and no one else wanted him, really.
The Lions did offer him a lot of money.
Which
helped. Yeah, and they've got Harris Andrews. I reckon Jackal wouldn't mind the prospect of matching up on Marcus Adams again if that happens. But yeah.
Harris Andrews is having almost his best season for the intercepts and his offensive work. But yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, I reckon Lynch will go in with the, you know, the, you would assume the same approach that worked so well last time of, you know, really wanting to get a body on him.
God, he was aggressive. Did you notice the moment where, I think he got fined for it, but he, I'm sorry, I can't remember which JBS player, but he was on the ground and he sort of double jumper pushed him into the ground a few times. I'm actually motioning this, so it's weird doing it, but for a good podcasting.
It's great podcasting, yeah.
Yeah, he's an aggressive man. So it'll be exciting. And, like, you know, last time we played these guys, it wasn't a very friendly game.
The concern is their midfield bats a lot deeper than ours, which is rather held together.
Well, in fairness, right now, our midfield is the shallowest in the AFL, with all due respect to Jake Arts, but, you know.
Yeah. Look, there's a chance that Presti is...
Dimmer said back. Actually that it was Edwards was the one to come back.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting, because last week Presti...
I mean, he was speaking in the press, so maybe he just slipped his mind, but yeah.
Look, it's not the end of the world if we don't win and we get Prestia and Edwards back for the following week. And so, you know, win a couple of games going into the bye. But yeah, I think you know, it's a good opportunity, you know, just to play with the sort of the abandon of low expectations.
Frisky underdogs. Couldn't agree more. And because we beat the GWS, our season's still alive either way. Like, it was such an 8-point game, that GWS game.
Yeah.
And the fact that Tom Green got injured, thank you, Nathan Broad, probably doesn't hurt either, because if you look at the other teams. Green.
Yeah.
Toby, what did I say?
Tom.
Anyway, it does. Tom, who's, you know, kicked that beautiful goal and looks like
who we fantasize about in a Richmond jumper all the time.
I would love to have him. Thank you, Captain Obvious. 8-point game. The other team's chasing us to get the last spot in the final eight aren't as competitive. So that was probably a pretty big injury. So yeah, yep, it's nothing to lose.
No, and. The Crows and Essendon the 2 weeks after that before the bye, so you know there's a chance. You know we can be in pretty solid shape by then. You know, all things considered.
Inshallah.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy's played him off files with you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Took it, Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, sure.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Go Tigers.